Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And there are U.S. airstrikes in Iraq, as you've been hearing on the news, the first ever ordered by President Obama. The Pentagon is confirming this morning that U.S. fighter jets have dropped bombs as part of a military operation outside the city of Erbil, where the U.S. has a consulate and now military advisors who the president recently deployed. In remarks from the White House last night, the president was well aware that he was elected to get us out of Iraq.
I know that many of you are rightly concerned about any American military action in Iraq, even limited strikes like these. I understand that. I ran for this office in part to end our war in Iraq and welcome our troops home, and that's what we've done. As Commander-in-Chief, I will not allow the United States to be dragged into fighting another war in Iraq. And so even as we support Iraqis as they take the fight to these terrorists, American combat troops will not be returning to fight in Iraq, because there is no American military solution to the larger crisis in Iraq. The only lasting solution is reconciliation among Iraqi communities and stronger Iraqi security forces.
President Obama last night with us now, New York Times White House correspondent Mark Landler. Hi, Mark. Thanks for giving us a few minutes as this news is breaking.
Happy to, Brian.
And as we hear in the president's language and tone there, he's very reluctant to do this. I think the word reluctant was in the New York Times headline about the story this morning. So what are the details of the airstrikes that are being announced, and are they less than some people advocated for?
Well, I mean, it's obviously early days, and they're not likely to be the last airstrikes. This will probably be a campaign that will go on for a while. It was basically some laser-guided bombs that were dropped on artillery positions that were engaged in fighting with the Peshmerga, which is, you know, the armed militia of the Kurds who are defending the city of Erbil. And that's, of course, at the heart of why the president acted as he did. There's been just a tremendous fear over the last few days that the Kurdish capital is in real danger of falling to this militant group known as ISIS. And for the United States, the loss of Kurdistan was simply a scenario they couldn't contemplate. It would be too disastrous to the future of Iraq. And I think that's ultimately what forced the president's hand. And you're right, he's deeply reluctant. His initial actions in this regard were extremely modest, sending over 300 military advisors. This is not a step he ever wanted to take, but I think he felt that the risk both to the Americans who are living there and to the potential loss of Erbil were too great not to act.
To what extent was this strike justified as a way to protect Americans, when if these 300 advisors recently sent by this president were not there, then he would not have acted to protect the Kurdish capital?
I don't think that's clear, Brian, because even without the advisors, there was an American consulate there. We have a significant diplomatic presence in Kurdistan. And the loss of Kurdistan, you know, as I said earlier, would have been just so disastrous for the overall stability of Iraq. So I'm not sure that merely the introduction of the advisors was the tipping point. But you're right to say that bringing over these people, and most of them are based in Erbil, raises the stakes for the president and leaves a larger number of Americans vulnerable to being captured or worse.
I know Vietnam analogies are way overused, but this is how Vietnam started. We only sent advisors, but then we needed to protect the advisors, and we were up and up and away.
Absolutely. And by the way, this isn't just Erbil. You know, one of the things that the administration made clear after the president spoke is that there's also a concern about Americans in Baghdad and a very large embassy operation there. And so I think these airstrikes, though at the moment, are very limited to that area up in Kurdistan. We could see them down the road if ISIL were to make gains on Baghdad, also against the militant positions if they were threatening Baghdad as well.
And ISIL is the militant group, the Islamist radical group, been in the news more as ISIS. Now it's ISIL, which stands for?
That's the Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant. We in the New York Times go with ISIS, the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. In fact, the group itself has recently declared they want to be known as the Islamic State. And so that's just a question of nomenclature. But no matter what you call them, these guys are viewed as even more extreme than many of the militant groups the U.S. has dealt with over recent years. And of particular concern, and the president got at this last night, is their desire to completely eliminate ethnic and religious minorities in Iraq, notably these Yazidi, who many of whom are sheltering right on a mountaintop.
And I'm going to get to that and the president's use of the word genocide in connection with that in just a second. This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. It's New York and New Jersey Public Radio as we talk about President Obama's first ever airstrikes in Iraq, which took place this morning. Talking about it with Mark Landler, New York Times White House correspondent, 212-433-WNYC. If you want to get in on this, 212-433-9692. So yes, this other location, and listeners, we posted a map on our site. So if you don't know Iraq from the 11 years of war already, go and look at the map, because really we're talking about some different locations here than have frequently been in the news during the height of the war under President Bush. 212-433-WNYC if you want to talk about it on the phone, 212-433-9692, and follow along with the map at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. And this other location is Mount Sinjar, where the president suggested that a genocide might take place, and he used that word. Listen.
I've said before, the United States cannot and should not intervene every time there's a crisis in the world. So let me be clear about why we must act and act now. When we face a situation like we do on that mountain, with innocent people facing the prospect of violence on a horrific scale, when we have a mandate to help, in this case a request from the Iraqi government, and when we have the unique capabilities to help avert a massacre, then I believe the United States of America cannot turn a blind eye. We can act carefully and responsibly to prevent a potential act of genocide. That's what we're doing on that mountain.
Potential act of genocide. That's a big word, Mark. Why did he use the G word?
Well, he used it because of the stated aims of ISIS or ISIL, which is to eliminate, to kill all the men and enslave all the women. And because it has to do with a specific ethnic and religious minority that's being targeted for this kind of ethnic cleansing, if you will, that falls under commonly accepted definitions of genocide. And that is what automatically lifts this case above others. I mean, a fair question that the president will be asked in the coming days is why this group and not other groups? Why this group and not Syrians, for example, who are being targeted by barrel bombs in Aleppo? The difference is the nature of the discriminatory nature of this attack and his fear that that we could just see wide-scale slaughter. In a way, the rationale he laid out is very similar to what he did a few years ago in Libya when Muammar Gaddafi's forces were marching on Benghazi. You heard him say, and this is critical to the president's thinking, when the U.S. has the capacity to avert a slaughter, we can't turn a blind eye. In this case, he's concluded that we not only should, but we can make a difference, and that's what prompted him to announce this intervention.
Who are the Yazidis? Because I think for many of our listeners who have, to one extent or another, followed the news about the Iraq war over the years, we've heard Iraq is basically divided into Sunni, Shiites, and Kurds in terms of the population. Yazidis, today may be the first time that a majority of our listeners have ever heard the word, and Mount Sinjar was also not one of those places that came up, as major battlefronts in the war. General Petraeus did not make his name there, et cetera, et cetera. So who are the Yazidis, and what is Mount Sinjar?
Well, you're right, Brian, in that I hazard a guess that before yesterday morning, not that many people even in Washington, D.C. knew much about the Yazidi. They're an ancient religious sect. They have elements of Zoroastrianism in their faith, and they have a very long history in Nineveh province. They view Mount Sinjar as a holy, deeply reverential place. There's some suggestion, I think they believe, that Noah's Ark wound up there. And so this is a kind of a very kind of mystical group. And you're right, they weren't a central actor in the Iraq War. But ISIS, having crossed the border from Syria and having this kind of extremist philosophy, these folks are in the middle. I mean, this is the mountain range that divides Iraq from Syria. And ISIS, by the way, has not been discriminating purely against this group. They've also said that Iraqi Christians are a major target as well. So, I mean, I think it's sort of geographic misfortune for this group that they are where they are, and the extreme nature of the ISIS dogma that has suddenly put them in to the middle of a battle when they hadn't figured much in it in the past.
And I think that even goes back to the name of the group that you said they are now calling themselves, which is simply Islamic State rather than Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. Because with this Yazidi area, Mount Sinjar, being so close to Syria, what Islamic State is trying to do is not even recognize the legitimacy of Iraq as a nation with control over that area, or Syria as a nation with control over the adjacent area. And so Islamic State refers to a claim that area is theirs, including this, correct?
That's right. I mean, they've established a caliphate that straddles the border between Syria and Iraq and encompasses, at the moment, a fairly large swath of territory that they control, and presumably would encompass all of Iraq and Syria were the group to go as far as it wants to. And you know, as people have pointed out, they've been militarily very proficient, to use the words of a senior administration official last night. And they're also amassing a great deal of arms, weaponry, money, access to oil production. So this is not a ragtag band by any means. They're a very formidable force. And, you know, parenthetically, one that now controls a major dam near the city of Mosul, with the power to unleash, an extreme amount of destruction were they to breach that dam. So, you know, all of this factors into the administration's calculations and leads President Obama to take this fateful step of reengaging there.
You say they're not a ragtag band, but how old are they even? I mean, we've spent the last, 12 years training the Iraqi army, and this, I was going to say ragtag band, kind of comes out of nowhere and turns out to be more powerful than the Iraqi army in significant portions of the country. How did that happen?
Well, you know, I think the honest answer is we probably need to do more investigation. I mean, this is a group that's rooted in some of the extremist Sunni militant groups of the Iraq War. If you remember Zarqawi and his group, there's a common root here. So they're not a group that has come out of nowhere. But as you said, it's astonishing, and I think something that's still astonishes people within the administration, that after untold billions of dollars of American investment in the Iraqi security forces, they were routed by this group who, you know, even as recently as a year to 18 months ago, none of us were writing about. I mean, the major militant groups in Syria that were drawing attention were al-Nusra and a couple others, and no one was writing about the Islamic State. So to some extent, you're right. There is an element to which they appear like a ragtag band. I think what has really surprised people is how quickly they've amassed these resources and how they've pursued this military advance with a fair amount of discipline and organization. And that was a message that, in a conference call last night held by the White House, came through over and over again, that in particular in this march on Erbil, they've shown themselves to be an organized, disciplined military force to an extent that has surprised everybody.
We're talking about President Obama's first ever airstrikes on Iraq, which took place today, talking about it with New York Times White House correspondent Mark Landler and Jose in Queens. You're on WNYC. Hello, Jose.
Good morning. My question to your guest, I think he has alluded to it a moment ago. You know, I believe that a well-oiled propaganda machine can justify just about anything that they do. And my concern is, why is the United States so selective in whose lives is important? Here we have an Israeli-Palestinian war or massacre that's been going on for so long. And their lives, human lives, are actually being lost, slaughtered, a genocidal act being committed in a group of people. And the United States condones it. And all of a sudden...
Right. Jose, I'm gonna leave it there. I understand the larger point you're making. I don't want to get drawn into the Israeli-Palestinian conflict here. But I will say that many people are calling to ask a version of the same question, Mark, which is out of all the groups that are threatened, oppressed, suffering in the world, people are raising the Syrian refugees most common as the comparison question here. Why are we going to this extent for the Yazidis and not for others?
Well, look, it's a valid question. I did raise it earlier because
yes.
I do think the president will face it. And I think his answer, I don't want to put myself too much into his mind, but I think he might answer it on two grounds. One that I alluded to earlier, which is the specific nature of this being a religious minority in a country that seemed to be marked for extinction by the Islamic State, which gives it a sort of a different potentially genocidal connotation. And secondly, that notion that the U.S. might actually be able to do something to stop it. I think he would say in the case of Syria, that he could not contemplate an American intervention that would be at all politically tenable at home that would stop a sectarian conflict that's engulfed the entire country of Syria. That may be an unsatisfactory answer for people who are thinking about those folks in Aleppo that are being barrel-bombed, and I understand that. But that's the argument that the president has made in the past when he's justified a humanitarian intervention. It's not only that it's right on moral grounds, but that the U.S. has to have a plan that will work. And, you know, that's why they hold up the Benghazi example. By going in with NATO and bombing and stopping Gaddafi's forces, they were able to avert a slaughter in Benghazi. He would argue, I think, that he couldn't see such a scenario in Syria. Israel-Gaza obviously is a completely different story because it involves the interests of a key American ally in the region. And so I think for that reason it's a different case. But look, the listener raises a valid question that I think the president's going to have to answer in the coming days.
Alex in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Hi, Alex.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on the show. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Last year I was conducting some field research in Tunisia. I'm a professor of political science at a metro-based university here. And one of the last interviews I did was with one of the former ranking intelligence officers in Tunisia. And he had been...
What's your question as regards Iraq today? Forgive me, but our time is short.
Okay, of course. Well, it's more of a comment in that the intelligence reports that this person was telling me was saying that the almost suggesting that the U.S. was barking up the wrong tree by condemning Assad, that other groups in the Syrian theater were so vastly worse than what the government was doing and that the government was only reacting to these groups.
Well, that was part of President Obama's rationale for staying out, that it was complex who the good guys were and the bad guys were, and adding U.S. Arms there or military action might just make the situation worse. But, Alex, I'm going to leave that there. I do want to make sure to mention the name of one other country before you go, Mark. And for those of you looking at the map online, you could see that this area of Mount Sinjar is not just very close to Syria and Iraq, it's very close to Turkey. And I wonder at what point, if there would be a point, that the government of Turkey, just as they have fought the Kurds over there when they've, you know, tried to take too many steps toward independence, might feel threatened themselves and get involved militarily or in some other way that could be helpful, maybe is the right word, with dealing with this Islamic State group.
Yes, I think that's an obvious next development. I think the U.S. has been obviously in very close contact with the Turks. Yesterday, there was even some speculation earlier in the day that the initial airstrikes that now apparently appear to have been from Iraqi forces could have actually been from Turkish forces. So there's been a great deal of speculation that the U.S. will attempt over time to make the Turks a part of this effort. I think the Turks are also getting ready to deal with an influx of refugees. So, and the Turks have already conducted, I think, or talked about conducting airdrops of their own humanitarian relief. So clearly the Turks have to be a partner here, and they probably will be because, as you say, anything that is this destabilizing on a shared border is something they're going to worry about.
And obviously we will have to see where this one episode, I guess it's two attacks by the United States this morning lead. We already have a statement from Senators John McCain and Lindsey Graham denouncing a policy of half measures. So there's going to be pressure at least from them to ratchet it up even further. And once a bombing campaign gets started, if it's not successful, then there's, you know, obviously going to be pressure to escalate it. So this is the beginning of something, not the end of something, obviously. And listeners, if you want to see a photo of Mount Sinjar, we have one of those on our page, too. You could see you could see not only how close Mount Sinjar is to Turkey and to Syria, but how this really is like, you know, on a people trapped on a mountain. It actually looks like that. So go see that photo at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And we thank New York Times White House correspondent Mark Landler. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brian.